Jewishly observant home.
My father and his father were the family wanted them to be rabbis, so they had good.
Where did they go to school?
Well, in Europe.
Okay.
Then my father actually was socialist minded,
mm-hmm.
and was a little bit lacked religious enthusiasm, religious activity. We belonged to the when we moved to East Liberty, and joined the Tree of Life Synagogue in Oakland.
Which means that you wrote on Shabbos.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then later on, when the Tree of Life closed in Oakland, we joined the Temple.
Mm-hmm. You're talking now as the child of your parents, that your parents already joined the Temple.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And my mother was religious formally.
Less than that.
Dad was really knew the Torah and the Bible, and he was a religious.
He was a skeptic because he felt that he had learned enough to question.
And mm-hmm. What he questioned was the. He became very much socialist minded.
Actually, it's your grandfather that was the member of the Beth Hamedrash HaGadol,
yes,
not your
yes,
father.
Yes.
Okay, I want to correct that. Sure. Was he a member of the Workman's Circle, your father? Or the Socialist Party?
Socialist Party.
Here in Pittsburgh.
He ran for office.
They wanted him to run for office for mayor.
Was this with Sidney and Sadie Stark, or this is before the...
Well, I don't know. They were
could
friends.
Have been the same time.
Same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But Dad's friends encouraged him not to.
Uh-huh.
I guess it would affect... He had quite a business activity then.
He was a capitalist.
Right. Capitalist. Right.
And at home... Can you tell me a little bit about the economic situation? Were you comfortably off?
Yes, comfortably well
and
off.
And a happy home.
Mm-hmm.
We had an automobile early in life.
Mm-hmm.
Played a little tennis in the streets. We had, and we had quite a family of uncles and aunts around. And
mm-hmm.
Many they were in the business and they were doing well.
What about your education?
Well, I feel that my family was doing so well that they didn't prime us for selecting a career as many people. You're becoming a doctor,
mm-hmm.
you'll become a lawyer. They just felt we'd fit into the
mm-hmm,
family
mm-hmm.
activities.
What about cultural life?
Dad was a man of culture.
Dorothy told me that her mother wrote Russian and Polish and so on.
My mother just spoke English well, without an accent, and Yiddish, of
mm-hmm,
course, extensively.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Were
there any cultural activities that your parents were involved in?
Oh, his father.
Father was active in everything. He was one of the prime movers in the Montefiore Hospital.
Oh, really?
Yes. When they were on Center Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol recently knows a man, Manny Richbound, who told her that Dad Finkelhor was a student of literature quoted the classics, and I didn't see him read that kind of material,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but I knew he had that kind of.
And dad's too. My dad, much of the time that our family was growing up, he traveled for the
mm-hmm,
for the
mm-hmm,
family.
Mm-hmm.
They manufactured later. They tried to manufacture clothing in Pittsburgh for a while. But we had a comfortable home. And,
there's a question here. That really goes more to Dorothy than to you, because you grew up in Pittsburgh. I was wondering, how old were you when you came to Pittsburgh?
20.
Okay.
I was married when I was 20. We lived here for less than a year. We went back. Herb had never worked when we married. I had never worked.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have even high school education. That is, I had those 3 years. And I took a job. I was a window trimmer.
Well, what I really would like to know is the contrast between living in New York and living in Pittsburgh, if you can.
Well, yes. I came from a very loving home. And Herb came from a happy home. But they didn't send him to New York, to Columbia University, to come back with a bride. Does that put it in a nutshell? And having no job, in New York.
I dropped out of college to marry a high school dropout.
And so coming back here they gave him a job. That wasn't a problem, but we had to live with his folks, mm-hmm. which we did for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mother Finkelhoe was a lady. She never actively said anything to upset me,
mm-hmm.
but I was not happy in the home for the very good reason that in my mother's home, love overflowed toward me.
Dorothy
came
in.
Wouldn't have expected that to happen in my mother-in-law's home, even
mm-hmm.
if she thought that it was a good match.
In other words, what you're contrasting is the atmosphere of the two cities.
Right.
Okay.
Now, it was Mother Finkelhoe's home. Now, I often wonder whether I would have gone back and earned my 3 degrees and everything else that had been important in my life if I had adjusted well to being a daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Since Mother Finkelhoe was a great bridge player and thought that that would be a very good thing for me to learn to do when I rebelled, and I did something that's inexcusable, but I did it. One of the cousins gave a party for me, and I was told I'm invited to a party. Well, I elected not to go, but that party was in my honor. And of course I would learn to play bridge. Well, since I didn't, I immediately went, after we came in 19, when I was 20, we spent less than a year. Then we went to New York, stayed there for about 4 years, then came back because we weren't. Herb had done well in New York, and he opened 2 stores in Philadelphia for the company. And Dad Finkelhorst said, if you're doing so well, why don't you come back home? We can use you. Which we did, and then went to live with Mother Finkelhorst for 3.5 years, which I can't say that they were difficult years because I immediately went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And earning both a baccalaureate and master's in 4 years and having a full-time job meant that I had no time to worry about whether I was loved or not.
Well, could you contrast the life between New York and Pittsburgh culturally?
There was no comparison. My father had a cash register, and we worked behind the counter. And when you have a cash register, work behind the counter, you have money jingling in your pockets. And New York is a theater town. And every weekend, we'd buy our tickets for Friday night, Saturday matinee, and Saturday evening. And between the Saturday performances, we'd go to a Greek restaurant, a table d'hote meal from the beginning to the end, and you really expanded how
mm-hmm.
wonderful life was, and then you went to the evening performance.
Mm.
So culturally, I came here, it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Why, they were fighting the blue laws. You
mm-hmm.
couldn't. You didn't have symphony concerts here. They had to fight that one to bring them in.
Mm.
But I was so involved with my education because I found out I was a good student.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions here asks about school days. Your school days, of course, were in New York, and you already mentioned a little bit about school days. I was wondering whether you wanted to say.
Yes. Well, my school days here were wonderful.
No, I'm not talking about college.
You mean
I'm talking about elementary, junior
well,
high.
Well, the elementary school, they were great. For one thing, we walked to school,
mm-hmm.
and the fun. Mm-hmm. was walking to school, therefore busing to me is something that I can't even understand people considering that a way of life for children. I loved the fact
sure.
that I wasn't a good student really did not bother me because my home didn't molest. They didn't feel that I was demeaning them. That was up to me. Neither me and my teacher and I should have a better contract. And after I graduated in 31, I taught in the city high schools here for 2 years as a substitute. Therefore, I visited many schools. Washington Irving High School was so far ahead of the schools in Pittsburgh, I don't know that they have yet caught up with them. So I saw the difference, and New York had better schools.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Herb, do you want to tell me a little bit about your school life?
You
want to put it on, dear?
It is on, because I wanted your school experience.
Did you get to tell anything about what your mother said when you didn't graduate high school?
All right, you're good. If you want to. Yes, it's part of my speech. When I didn't graduate, and graduation night.
I'd like to add one thing. Dorothy was so busy. She was because she was given love and freedom. She wasn't criticized or told what to do or what not to do. She did a lot of things as a youngster. She was so busy doing things herself that she didn't do the things she was supposed to do to fit to for her schoolwork, mm-hmm. so she didn't mm-hmm. graduate. Mm-hmm.
Well, so graduation night when I had nothing to do, my friends were wearing their white dresses and carrying the red roses, I let myself wide open. I said to my mother, "You know, Mom, I'm nobody." And my mother said, "Nobody is nobody. Everybody is somebody. And when you find what you're good in that you'll be better than anybody. But not because you're my daughter. Because it's in all of us to succeed."
She said there's greatness in all of us.
There's greatness. If you can pick yourself up and brush yourself off and start over again, you can be what you want to be. And with that as the Holy Grail, I made a life.
That's wonderful.
See, her mother hadn't made her feel she failed as a person. She just failed a project. And she was still the same. She had always had a good image as a youngster. She still had the same good image.
That's wonderful.
And she's never let failure clutter up her mind.
Well, this book, which is based on, which the thesis is emotional energy is comparable to money. But early in life, we learn that money runs out. And emotional energy runs out too, but we don't know it. And so if we spend our time fearing, being afraid of trying, but fear we will fail, then some of that emotional energy is just drained off, just as it would be if you wasted money. And I got that in my home. And it was wonderful.
And actually, the theme that there's greatness in all of us, Dorothy, when she got into her having her own small school.
We're not at that place yet. I don't even want to touch it yet. Right now, I want you to tell me which schools you went to.
I went to Fulton Public School.
Which is where?
In East St. Clair Street in East Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And Peabody High School.
Mm-hmm.
University of Pittsburgh for a year. And I started Columbia.
Why did you leave Pitt?
I wasn't really working as hard as I should. I drove the family. I was the one who drove the family car most, and I just wasn't achieving. I was just getting by, and the family, Uncle Sam's family, was a little more demanding than my family, so they shipped me to New York.
What did you major in at Columbia?
The theater, drama.
Did they know that back here that you were going to major
in
drama?
No. I just sent to Columbia. I was in biz ed at Pitt,
mm-hmm.
and I went to Columbia. And before I was got myself a dorm room, before I registered, I noticed a little group starting a theater
mm-hmm.
across the street in the women's in Barnard College. And I went to one of their rehearsals. Somehow I had gotten into a little theater work here at the synagogue in the B'nai Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I taught Sunday school and I put on a show for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got bitten by the bug.
Bitten by the bug. Mm-hmm. And I went to New York and I entered, I enrolled in courses in the theater.
Mm-hmm. And what did your parents say when they found out?
Actually, I don't know whether they even knew. They thought I was an Uncle Sam's, thought I was Uncle Sam's charge, and they were two older boys.
Did you actually act on the stage?
No,
you want to be an actor or a writer or producer or director?
Anything in the theater. And I was in the company I started with, I worked with a little drama group at Columbia and Barnard, started 3 one-act plays, and I was in all 3 of the one-act shows.
Mm-hmm.
Then I looked around and went to the theater a lot. I lived in the dorm, and I looked around to get started. Then I met Dorothy.
Okay, so let me see if that's the next. No, we're not ready yet for the great scene of you two meeting each other. When you were growing up, tell me something about health care in Pittsburgh. health and medical care as you were growing up, illnesses or how illnesses were taken care of or treated?
Well,
and so
I think every family had their local doctor. We had a Dr. Milton and Luba Robin Goldsmith.
Oh, was she one of your doctors?
He was a doctor. They both were our doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they took care of us. And
Luba Robin Goldsmith's name appears together with your aunt's name on that charter of the National Council of Jewish Women.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yes. They were your family doctors.
Family doctors, yes. And there were always specialists who were called in.
Mm-hmm.
The only, I don't know who brought the children. I think they were born at home, so they might have had a midwife.
Does the name Baba Chana Sandusky ring any bells?
I don't know.
No.
My brother Leonard.
Were you born in the hospital or at home? As far as you know, you were born at home? Oh, you were
born
in Beaver
Falls.
Oh, you were born in Beaver
Falls.
Okay.
You
were living there around the same time, I think, as Mr. Rayfield had his farm there, or had he already left when you...
I don't know. Of course, I was just here age 1 to 3.
I see. Okay.
I know the Rayfields are good friends of the folks.
Mm-hmm. You were telling me, Herbert, I was asking you about health and medical care, and you told me that Milton and Luba Robin Goldsmith were the family doctors.
And, of course, since Dad was active in the hospital, and my brother Leonard was of an age when he had a lot of doctor friends.
Mm-hmm.
Who was...
Al Kamen?
I don't know.
Who died? Oh, Shube. Tom Shube?
Tom Shube, and he were in Philadelphia school together.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard went to a textile school in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. So... We had contacts with the leading physicians. I don't know at the time whether there were so many prominent Jewish specialists. It seems to me that often they'd call a non-Jewish specialist. This may be one or two occasions, but there were a lot of Jewish prominent doctors.
Dorothy, when you were growing up, do you have any memories of the health and medical care in the Lower East Side?
Yes,
in your
I do.
Home?
They belonged to a Ferayim, F-V-R-E-I-M.
The Jutama Ferayim.
So they provided medical service. The doctor
mm-hmm.
came to the house. When my father no longer belonged to that group, my father engaged that doctor, whose name was Block, to be our personal physician, and as I recall it, doesn't seem possible, but I recall, at $10 a year, we had only not 7 kids.
Well, we
now
used
they
to pay
not,
50 cents for a doctor's visit.
But we really did not call on the doctors first. As if we had a cold, or you got hot tea,
mm-hmm.
and milk and magnesia, citrate mm-hmm. of magnesia, and a telephone call to my grandmother, who came down from, she lived either in the Bronx or in near Central Park. She may not have had enough food, which was true. She always lived where there was fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
She'd come down, sit at our bed, and tell us stories.
Oh, how wonderful.
And that was my grandmother.
She had some home remedies.
Pardon me, Doug?
How she can help a room, Uncle Jack said how she can make a room of people relax.
How do you say, Doug?
She had a way of sensing that people needed to relax.
Yeah.
Do you remember
if you yawned, that means there wasn't enough air. She was great
mm-hmm.
on fresh air.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. She believed in fresh air before others did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There were clinics at the time, too, weren't there?
Oh, there were clinics, sure. Oh, yes. That's as a matter of fact, one of the stories I tell of myself, when I was 14, I'm impressed with the fact that my family allowed me to be who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did tell you about when I was 13, I entered this contest and I took one off with the top prize of $50. My family didn't think I was better. They just thought that was who I was. Mm-hmm. I was that sort of person. Mm-hmm. I put on shows. That didn't make me better than anybody. So that I didn't have an exaggerated idea, but I also didn't have a deflated idea of who I was. And what does these
clinics you're talking about?
Oh, clinics, yes. And so one day, while working in my father's store, a young man, a little child, walked by with his mother, and he was developing a hump on his back, which I saw happening because they'd come back by several times a day. And so I spoke to the mother, and I said, "Do you see this?" And she said, "Yes, I don't know what to do." So I said, "Well, go to the Essex Street dispensary. They'll take care of you." Well, first of all, I stopped them and suggested it. I told them where to go. And then my mother said, "How is it you're such a Budinsky?" I have a story which ties on to that. My mother was visiting me when I was with the college. And because placement was so important, we did everything we could to make the applicant look presentable. We loaned them a coat, gave them a hat, gloves. Long before it became important, years later, of course, we think of it now as part of getting a job. But we had a boy in class who had a bad eye and very disfigured. And he was a very good student. And so before I even sent him out, I talked with him about his eye. And he said, "Well, what can I do about it?" I said, "You can remove it and put a glass eye, because you're going to find it very difficult to get a job." And so his parents came down, we talked about it, and tomorrow morning they were going to have this operation. And my mother was visiting, and I was telling her that. And she said, "Are you going to sleep tonight?" And I said, "Why wouldn't I sleep?" She said, because of you, some fellow's having his eye taken out." I said, "Not because of me, but because I am trying to help him." Now my mother again accepted me, and which I think is, I'm emphasizing it because that's what education is about.
Herb, back to you. Dorothy has told me a little bit, and I'm going to come back to her because this is not on tape, about the various kinds of things she did during her adolescent years, fun and recreation. Can you tell me a little bit of what you did when you were a kid for fun and recreation?
Well, I'd say we rode a bicycle. There wasn't traffic, and we'd ride a bike around a whole block or two. We played a little tennis.
Where?
There was a big empty lot on Mellon Street below Negley, behind our house, and a young group of some of our two families and a few other families had built a tennis court, so we played some tennis and roller skating, and I think that was the...
And you had enough brothers that you didn't really feel lonely.
No. And each one of us had our own gang. We ice skated in Oakland. There was an ice skating rink.
What was the name of it?
Duquesne Garden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you belong to any kind of club as a teenager?
Yes, you did. Didn't you? Your crowd had a club.
Yes, I forget whether mm-hmm. there was any mm-hmm. anything. I remember once Leon Falk, and Charles Pottermaker, and one of the Davis, the Diamond Family boys, and I started a little club.
Oh, yes. Leon Falk lived in that neighborhood?
Leon Falk, I think he lived, no, I think Leon lived in Squirrel Hill. We were at Temple together.
Uh-huh,
we were Sunday school
uh-huh.
together.
Was this Jacob Davis or...?
No, it was a younger brother.
Same family.
Maurice?
Same.
No.
Not Alan?
No, still younger.
Who was the youngest?
Alan was the youngest, wasn't he? Max?
No, this one...
okay,
I think he was the youngest son.
I recognize the name Charles Powdermaker because there was a Mrs. Powdermaker who was active in council, and I've seen her name, Mrs. Charles Powdermaker, I guess the wife of the man that you were friendly with. Okay. Tell me a little bit about the show, because we didn't have it on tape. We talked about it when the tape was off.
Uh-huh.
About the show, the shows that you put on with the
other
children.
Yes, I used to produce shows, and I knew when I was 11 years old that I could produce a show and not be an author,
mm-hmm.
not be a playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And so a friend of mine wrote poetry. And
what was her name?
Her name was Nettie Barbash, Barbash, New York. And she would write the play, and that's where it would stay. That she wrote because she loved to write and write well. I picked it up as something you do with, and I put that on. And my father's store would be closed on Saturday, so it was a long store, as long as this thing. And so that's where I put it on. And also, I don't know why I knew it, but I thought of what we now call the dinner supper clubs, because I served ice cream sodas. I bought seltzer water, chocolate ice cream, and syrup.
You sold this?
I charged 2 cents for admission. I didn't just say, I'm so glad to get an audience.
But what about the ice cream? Did you sell that? Or you
no,
give me away?
That was part of it.
For the 2 cents, they got ice cream and...
In those days, two
mm-hmm.
cents. Back. So that... which leads me to...
Were you one of the actresses in the play?
Not at all. I was the producer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the director. So that maybe what we are is often hidden by what is expected of us.
Now we're going to get to an area that maybe we can ask you both to answer simultaneously, and that's the courtship and marriage story. You've already hinted at a very interesting story, and either one or both, tell me a little bit about it. You were at Columbia University,
yes.
And you were at Washington Irving High School.
No, I had already dropped out.
Oh, you'd already dropped out of high school.
Tell about your other boyfriend.
I was dating from the time I was 16 to 20, one fellow.
Okay.
And he was a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And he could make a living.
Mm-hmm.
But he came into the picture. And he looked like a picture out of a book. A high school dropout to find this good-looking young man who drank his coffee a little bit with his pinky out, you know, real fancy.
How did you two meet?
Well, let's see. First, this fellow, this attorney she was going with, wasn't very sympathetic to her youthful dreams and plans and hopes. And when she'd say something that she'd like to do or someday she'd like to do, he would say, look.
Who did it before? He had 2 questions. Who did it? I said, nobody. Just occurred to me. You're only a high school dropout. How would you know that?
Mm-hmm. But how did you two meet?
Well, then, Dorothy, we met at a dance in Greenwich Village.
Oh, how romantic.
What kind of a dance?
What kind of a dance?
The economist, Henry George,
yes,
developed the theory of single tax.
Yes.
We'll tax the land. Now, he had to get an audience. So he ran a dance every Friday night, and he invited Columbia University students to come down and use his ballroom. At the same time, please read the literature.
Fantastic.
Herb went down there. My sister was taken there by a boyfriend. Next week she said, I met a fellow from Pittsburgh. Why don't you come? Come down. Come with us. So
well,
I
Pittsburgh
did.
was an attraction because her My father's sister.
Twin sister lived here.
Oh, you didn't tell me
yeah,
that.
That's right. On Vicroy Street.
Uh-huh. So you did have a little Pittsburgh connection.
Yeah, that's right.
So you met in Greenwich Village.
That's
what year
right.
was this?
That's in 1922, in April. We were married in July.
You know, those are the years that people all write about when they write about the Greenwich Village era. It's the 20s that they write
that's
about.
Right, sure.
So you met at a dance run by Henry George, of all people.
Yeah.
Big you know, he was Agnes DeMille's grandfather.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Maternal grandfather.
I have Cecil DeMille's inkwell.
That was her uncle.
Yes, I knew that.
Also, halachically, he was Jewish because his mother was Jewish.
I was just going to ask you that.
Cecil and William B. DeMille's mother was a Franklin from England.
Oh.
Or maybe a Samuels. I'm trying to remember. I think she was a Samuels from England. Maybe quite a few others.
Samuels, wasn't he in Parliament?
Yeah. Sure. So
actually, what?
Okay, getting back to
we,
you. Did you ever listen to Henry George, or you just looked at each other?
No, we didn't listen to him. We were so busy.
We have since
In
written.
5 weeks, we had to get to know each other to find out how to get married without announcing it. We eloped.
Oh, tell me about it.
We just up and got married.
Where did you?
In those days, you didn't shack up or check in or.
But you told me you were married. Didn't you mention you were married by the Tolna Rebbe? So this is what kind of an elopement if you're married by the Tolna Rebbe?
Right. No, my folks never learned that. His father knew and kept the secret. But my father had five daughters, and he was scared to death we weren't going to get married. He already had an old maid, 21 years old, 22, my sister Eugene. And here I am, 20, and there he has a 17, and there he has a... So he used to say, when you get married, I'll buy you the most beautiful trousseau and give you $1,000. That was it. His father found out that we were married, said, insisted that we announce it. I said, if you could just not let on, my father will have a big wedding, and we and my father would have been very disappointed without it because the first of the five daughters. His father was such a gentleman. He kept this cut.
Well, where did you get married when you loved? In his court or something?
Right there in City Hall, New York.
Ah, but it wasn't a Jewish wedding, so it didn't count.
That's right. Didn't
count. So you had the works, a big wedding with the gown, with everything.
The gown,
where did you get married?
In the Broadway Central.